Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
What's up, nerds? This is Just a Couple Arslings, a Last Kingdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jessica Toomer.
And I am Melissa Fixie. We are writers for Sci-Fi Wire's Fangirls who started recapping The Last Kingdom in season three, so we decided to bring that nerdy, horny energy to Podcastlandia. So,
yes.
So this episode is kind of a special one because it's the first one that we are recording after the show has started being released.
Yeah, you guys have heard our voices. You know, the amount of bullshitting we do. And it feels like you really know us now. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I have not been able to listen to a full episode because I hate the sound of my voice. I listened to a little bit of one and it was basically a really intense sign that I say the word like too much and the phrase 100%. So I need to kind of curb that in myself, but also I'm not going to worry too much about it because I don't want to ruin our flow.
Look, and also, like, just to let everyone know, we do know how terrible we sound. I don't know why I was given a podcast.
You know, I think I wouldn't say that we're more terrible than anybody else. I just think it's really hard to listen to a recording of your own voice.
Yeah, there's some kind of psychology going on behind that, I think.
Yeah, it's super weird. Whenever I do an interview, I always send it out to Rev to be to be transcribed because I cannot bear to listen to my own voice for that long.
Yeah, Rev is like the savior of every journalist that I know because no one likes to hear their own voice unless, I guess, you know, you're
a psychopath?
An actor. Yeah, a psychopath. I was going to say, like, someone who does that professionally, right. Like James Earl Jones. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't like his own voice.
Yeah. James Earl Jones. I feel like even James Earl Jones would be like, ugh, maybe I'm too deep today.
Well, speaking of,
that's a really good segue.
We're getting so fucking good at these guys. Insane.
Right. We're good at segues. We want to talk about the new Star Wars trailer just for a little bit.
Yeah, why not?
Right.
For shits and giggles.
Like,
let's do it.
You know, we have the geek out section, but I feel like Star Wars is such a cultural phenomenon and we write for a geeky site. So I feel like Star Wars transcends the geek out section because it's such a big deal. And this is the last one in the Skywalker saga. Rise of Skywalker.
It's like heartbreaking.
I know. Rise of Skywalker is like, it's the end, sort of.
There's a lot riding on this one.
There's a lot riding on this one.
There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of, you know, like, there's, obviously there's some nostalgia and, you know, it's sentimental to watch any of these movies But I think this one is definitely, at least from that trailer, it's like really kind of cashing in on that, like knowing that we're going to ball our eyes out and they just want to help us along. And the trailer for the latest trailer that they premiered during Monday Night Football, I think.
I didn't watch it during football. I just watched it
I saw it on Twitter the next day. But there were some hardcore fans that sat through that football game to watch that trailer. So we salute you.
Right.
But yeah, it was very emotional. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, it looked beautiful. I don't understand the science behind some of it because it looks like they're like riding space horses on a spaceship, which I'm very into. But also,
you're a horse girl.
I know.
I immediately thought of you when I saw those space horses.
Right. Finn is the horse girl of Star Wars, and that's why I feel a real kinship with him. But it just, you know, I think it's going to be big. I really have a lot of hopes and dreams pinned on this, and there's probably no way that it'll all work out without me being disappointed in some way. But my biggest thing is I really hope they don't retcon The Last Jedi saying that Rey doesn't have special parents. I hope they allow her to just be special and be the chosen one because of who she is, not because of who her parents are. I would really love that if that stayed.
The Last Jedi gets a lot of shit, which I don't understand because I honestly think it's one of the best of the series.
I think I would rank it like just after Empire. I love The Last Jedi. It was so good.
Much good in there.
Yeah.
But that probably for me was the best thing about that movie was that it was kind of revealed that she's been searching for her parentage for so long, and it was revealed that they're nothing special, you know what I mean?
Right.
As opposed to someone like Kylo Ren, who's his dad's Han Solo, his mom's Leia. I mean, it just felt so real and so honest, which is, you know, Star Wars is this kind of crazy thing where we're having like shootouts in the galaxy and people can move things with their mind, and there's just so much sci-fi and stuff going on. But it was so nice to like have that kind of really human moment of, you know, I've been looking for these people and trying to figure out who I am. And it turns out like they're just normal people. And my sense of self doesn't have to depend on them at all.
Right.
And I think it opens up, you know, the larger universe for, you know, kids looking at Rey and thinking like, oh, you have to be special to be special. But you don't, you know, it's. I don't know. I loved that moment, and I hope that I have a lot of faith in J.J. Abrams, so hopefully he won't.
Here's the thing. I have a lot of faith in J.J. Abrams in some ways, but in terms of writing a satisfying ending, I'm not sure that I do.
Lost has fucked you up.
It's, you know, I just, we'll see. Like, I really liked The Force Awakens. I thought it was a really great movie. So I'm, you know, and I like his Star Trek movies too, or at least two of them. Two out of three are pretty good. But I don't know. I feel like there's a lot riding on it. And like we said, it's a beautiful trailer. But Star Wars, I mean, I don't remember a time not loving Star Wars, you know? And so it means a lot to me. And I really hope he sticks the landing. But if he doesn't, it's not like this is the end of Star Wars. You know, you've got the Mandalorian coming up. You've got the Obi-Wan Kenobi show, the Cassian Andor show. Like, Star Wars isn't going anywhere. But this is just wrapping up this particular family story.
This is wrapping up, the Skywalker story, which is, you know.
Modern myth. It's epic.
Big one. That's a big one.
Yeah.
And we have to talk a little bit about Reylo because that's where my heart rests.
You know,
are you a Reylo stan or no?
Okay, so here's the thing. I love the sexual tension between Rey and Kylo Ren. I want them to act on that, but I also want her to kill him by the end of the movie. So
he should die by the end.
Right. So I'm sort of a Reylo, but I don't want a happy ending for Reylo. I just want them to make out. I know they won't
hook up.
Well,
then
I know they won't bone because it's Star Wars
and it's
very chaste. But give me like a big makeout moment, and then I don't know. She cuts off his head with his own lightsaber, something like that.
Okay, I could get down with that. That's fine.
That's more how I feel about Reylo. But it's mostly just like. Yeah.
It's the
Adam Driver effect. And
it's real.
Everybody in that trailer was so good looking. Like, everybody's hot in that movie.
Gosh.
It's a lot. Like, you've got Oscar Isaac there with his scarf.
Ethnic hips.
Yes.
Did you see that?
I did. Where he didn't fit into Harrison Ford's chair because of his hips.
Yeah.
Yeah. I respect it. And, like, Finn has gone from, like, cute to, like, okay, he's got, like, a chiseled jaw. He's a man now. And then
John Boyega,
so cute. Love him. And then, you know, you've got Adam Driver, who is just so large.
BDE.
Right.
I mean, there's just something. Yeah.
Right.
Everyone's looking good.
Right. And it's Star Wars.
Yeah, I know. I want everyone to like get their due and to have their time. And
I'm gonna be crushed if anybody dies, but like I know somebody will.
Oh, people will die for sure.
I know. It's too much. Speaking of people dying, let's get into The Last Kingdom.
Segway.
I really liked this episode because there's so much just like cattiness at the beginning, but then it just really, segues again into some really unpleasant stuff for Aethelflaed, and our queen deserves better than that.
There can be no bloodshed here. We are all mistaken and we are all proud. What men say is true. You behave as if you were still at your mother's tit.
Yeah, so we start off, and, you know, cutesy is not a word we use to describe the show often, but it is, like, a cutesy little scene of Uhtred and Gisela kind of, like, frolicking in the lake, and...
It's cute.
You know,
It's allowed to be cute.
It's nice, and, like, on a logical level, I know this, like, adds a layer to their relationship and their romance, and it's nice to get to see them kind of have some downtime.
Mm.
The cave woman... in me is just like, oh, let's see more of Uhtred's six pack and it's clean. So that's really working for me. But it, like, it kind of ends very quickly.
Yeah.
Thanks to Æthelred, who is just such a dick this episode.
Yeah. You know, there's always been sort of that, like, simmering unpleasantness beneath the surface with Æthelred. And it really comes to a head in this episode, and you see exactly what his ambitions are and exactly what he's willing to do to achieve them. And it's not a great look.
No, he goes from kind of being this, like, bratty, spoiled little boy to being this really nasty individual who can inflict real harm on people. And he's got this sense of entitlement. Now he's got this sense of kind of power, and that he's protected because he marries Æthelflaed this episode. And yeah, when people like that are given some power and they're given status, it's never a good thing.
You know, not to bring up Game of Thrones again, but I feel like the shows have a lot in common, but he very much reminds me of Joffrey when he was still engaged to Sansa. And, you know, she has been raised with this idea that she's going to have a lord as a husband and it'll be great. And that's just what she's been raised to do. And to, you know, be seen as a political pawn and, like, be a princess, that's what she's been raised to do. And, you know, she's got this idea of, you know, who her prince will be. And outwardly, Æthelred acts very much like he's going to be that prince. Like, he's sweet to her when they're, you know, in public. And he's, you know, he's got the blonde hair and the, you know, cheekbones, like, or whatever. But he, you know, behind that sort of sheen is a real sadistic nature, and that sucks.
I say this with so much love to Toby Regbo.
He does a great job.
But fuck you, Toby Regbo, because you're not allowed to look that sweet and innocent and have those baby curls and wear these gorgeous house robes, just, like, that are giving me such fall vibes.
Right.
And then turn around and be such a psychopath. Well, I mean, it's not fair.
It is. And it's funny, when they're getting married, I think it was Æthelwald who calls him a pretty bread pudding of a boy.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's like, he called him bread pudding.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. He calls him a pretty bread pudding of a boy, which is
so apt.
Very apt.
Who wants to bone bread pudding?
Not me.
Alyssa.
No. But, you know, it's, and you've got, there's so much going on. Like, there's the wedding happening, but there's so many, like, different dynamics going on sort of behind the scenes as they're watching it. Like, you've got Uhtred and Finan and Sitrick, who are literally, like, sitting there watching the wedding and also planning, hey, we can't tell Æthelwald that we know that the speaking corpse is a lie, because then he'll tell Siegfried and the whole gig will be up. So they're planning all of that while there's a wedding going on. And then Æthelwald, you know, comes rocking up and is like, hey, dudes, are we still going to be kings together? Because a corpse said so. And it's just, I love all the different dynamics going on in one scene. It's so good.
Poor Æthelwald. He's like that dude that it's like, you've made plans with your friends, but then your friends have, like, group texted without you and made other plans, and you roll up and you're like, hey, are we still doing this? And we're like, nah,
actually,
like, we made other plans.
Bye. And we don't have a ticket for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's sad. I feel for him. But then at the same time, you're putting your hopes in, like, a talking corpse. So you're an idiot.
Right. Very stupid. And also at the same time, you've got Alfred, who's watching this whole thing go down. And you can see that in his heart, he knows that Æthelred is a bad man. He knows that Æthelred is not going to be a good husband to Æthelflaed. But at the same time, he's, like, convinced himself he's a godly man. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. I need to make this, you know, political move. But you know that he knows. You can tell.
Yeah. He looks fine for you, dude.
Right.
It's not going to be fine for her.
Right. He looks crushed through the entire wedding, which is like not the mood that you want when you're getting married. And it's just, Alfred, again, ambition and not having any qualms about using other people to accomplish it is such a dangerous thing. And you can really see Alfred struggling against that, but losing that battle with himself.
Well, let's jump to a happier wedding that takes place before the legit wedding between Ethelred and Ethelfled. Tira and Bioka get hitched this episode. That was really nice.
That was nice. Like
a palate cleanser.
I don't quite understand how Bioka is allowed to get married. Because he's a priest, right? Like, I feel like they're not...
Right. Is this, like, Catholic Church level of strictness where it's like, you know, you need to stay... I don't know. I thought it was.
Well, it seemed like a thing with every other priest that we've met is, like, celibate. But I guess Bioka's, like, the number one priest, so he gets to have an exception. but, yeah, them getting married was really nice. It was just a sweet moment. And Tira's been through so much, and... He's very gentle with her, and I'll talk a bit more about Tira towards the end, but I love how her gentleness is so apparent in every single interaction she has with everybody, and it's nice to see them get married and find a little happiness together.
Yeah, she deserves it, and you know, Ethelfled deserves it too, and she does not get it.
She doesn't.
It's rough. It's her arc, especially this episode, is really hard to watch because, I mean, I knew the things that were coming. And so, honestly, I skipped through some things.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, I just don't need to see more like rape on TV. And I understand why. And it's done much more tastefully than in other shows. But it's just like the whole... It's such a buildup, right? So he's like climbing this ladder because he's putting her down. He's telling her what she can't do. He's making her feel so inferior. And then the kind of cherry on top is, you know, also it's your wedding night and I'm just going to be such a dick to you and, you know, assault you in this way.
Sure.
And I hate that for her.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's that whole scene. Like, first of all, before we get to the unpleasantness, we do meet the baby monk, which is... just the best.
Baby Osferth.
Little Osferth showing up. We love Osferth. He looks exactly like Bo Burnham, and that kind of throws me every single time. But yeah.
The monk version of Bo Burnham.
Exactly.
No, I swear I must have been high. I blacked this out. I don't know. But this first watch that we did when we were just kind of recapping for Sci-Fi Wire Fangirls, I completely forgot that Baby Monk was Leofrich's nephew, and he's Alfred's bastard son.
I remembered the Alfred's bastard thing, but I forgot about Leofrich's nephew, and that really explains why Uhtred is so willing to like add him to the crew right away, because you know, he had that bond with Leofrich, and they were besties, and
this is a solid he's doing for him, even though he's not here. It's so sweet,
right?
But yeah, there was a moment when we kind of meet him and we see his connections to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, did I know this before? You know, maybe I skipped over this part. I don't know. But yeah, he's going to be part of the group. And he becomes such like he's such a sweet presence in that group. He's so, you know, he wants to be a warrior, but he's clearly just so soft and
everybody,
he's a good influence.
Sure, but I also like that, you know, yes, he's softer than the other men in the Cookham crew, but they're also so very fond of him that they don't, like, try to, like, beat that softness out of him. You know what I mean? Like,
no, they embrace it.
They embrace it. Like, yeah, they tease him, but really they wouldn't want the baby monk to be any other way.
Look, if I, by the end of the show, if I don't get some kind of recognition of the bond between Baby Monk and our boy Finnan,
yeah,
I'm gonna be real pissed off.
It's cute. It's really nice.
There's a bromance there.
It's true.
It's just building.
You know where there's not a bromance building is Alfred and Uhtred again.
I was invited to Daneland, lady, to Paddington. And there I was asked to join with Siegfried and Eric. I was offered the Kingdom of Mercia.
Ha! And your response?
He's here, is he not? Say that is response enough.
after finding out that he went over into Daneland, you know, Alfred calls him up before him and Athelred and really wants to make this wedding even more awkward than weddings are. And is like, hey, man, why did you go to Daneland? And Uhtred's, you know, he doesn't tell him everything, but he's pretty honest with him. You know what I mean? Like, he tells him, you know, I heard that, you know, Siegfried and Eric were back and I went and found out they took London and it's really bad. And, you know, it's a good thing I went to Daneland so that we know this stuff. And at the same time, Alfred is like, but why were you even doing that? Why are you even doing this? Why can't I trust you? Blah, blah, blah. And I really liked Otto in this scene because he was like, hey, Uhtred's here and he's always come back to you. So why are you still so suspicious of him doing anything ever?
And yet he is here, Lord.
Doing what? Spying, waiting? Did he volunteer this information before being confronted? No, he did not.
No, Lord.
Ask yourself why. He is a sword I would rather wield than face, but he is not godly and never shall be.
It's so frustrating because it's so one note of Alfred that he does this every single time when Uhtred really ultimately has never given him a reason to doubt his loyalty.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see Otto be like his cheerleader in a way. Yeah. And I think it's because I think Alfred's biggest flaw to me is just how pious he is and I think his faith is it's something that blinds him to people that are really, you know, his allies and his friends. And Uhtred could be, you know, such a big help to him in realizing this vision of a unified England. But he constantly kind of throws a hurdle in that path because Uhtred doesn't believe the same way he believes. And for Alfred, that's just the biggest kind of insult, you know? And it's so interesting to kind of reckon with who Alfred is because on one hand, he's willing to kind of sell his daughter off to this guy. He knows he's not a good guy, but he's a Christian, so it should be cool.
Right.
On the other hand, he's got this warrior who has proven himself time and time again, helped him kind of take back his throne and been there for him in the darkest moments. Mm-hmm. And because he won't like get on his knees and pray with him in the church, like, he's always going to be suspicious of him. And that's just, I mean, it's so sad for Alfred. And for Uhtred, it's just very frustrating. And I don't blame Uhtred for starting to, you know, kind of
tire
hate
of
him.
That.
I would be.
Yeah.
I would be so tired.
Yeah. And, you know, there's that scene, that whole scene at the wedding feast is so uncomfortable to watch because it also, again, shows how awful Athelred is because he's so rude to Uhtred. And then, you know, sort of that, the contrast between how Athelred treats Athelflaed, which is just crazy to say, Athelred, Athelflaed, the tongue twister.
Too many Athels.
Too many Athels. how he treats her and how Uhtred treats her is so stark because, you know, she's been raised to be a princess, but she's also, you know, she's very aware of things that are going on in the kingdom and she's sort of learned at her father's feet, like how to be a ruler. So she has questions because she thinks about stuff like that. And, you know, Uhtred is, you know, obviously delighted at her interests and is, you know, totally willing to walk her through stuff. And Athelred is like, hey, shut up. You're just a girl. Shut up. Please don't be a part of this. Actually, he doesn't say please. That would be entirely too nice. But he just like
out of character,
very out of character. But he's so belittling to her in front of everybody that it just if he's willing to be that dismissive of her in public, like. It's even.
You know, it's not going to be good.
It's going to be even worse.
Closed doors.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, agreed. And it's, you know, it's a thing of obviously there's some envy and jealousy there, and that kind of rears its ugly head later.
Yeah.
With the accusations that he makes. But it's just, it's not a good look, dude. I mean, at this point, if your goal is to rule Mercia again and then to also kind of be king of England and take over, you know, Alfred's spot, your biggest ally in that is going to be your wife.
Right.
So you should be treating her a lot better than you are, but it's that kind of, you know, it's the misogyny coming out in him, thinking that she's just a woman and she doesn't have a role to play. But there's so much that she could do. I mean, obviously, Athelflaed is very smart, very capable. But even if she wasn't, even if the role she played was kind of a conduit between him and Alfred and kind of shoring up that bond and making things more reliable between them, he should just be treating her a lot better than he is.
Yeah.
And I think it's just ignorance and, yeah.
Well, there's this moment.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah, and there's this moment where he says to her, "You are no longer the king's daughter. You are my wife, and it is me who you will obey." So he doesn't even see her value in, like, getting him closer to her father. He just wants her to do what he says and nobody else. Right. And so that kind of, you know, control is such a red flag.
My dear, it's not your place to involve yourself in a conversation that became an informal witten. We were discussing matters of land and war.
Lord, I take an interest in these matters. My father has always encouraged...
You are no longer the king's daughter. You are my wife. It's me you will obey. You are delicate.
I find it interesting. I would speak with the king often.
You're of Mercia now. You are my queen.
But yeah, you know, there's that conflict, and there's, you know, the conflict with Alfred and Uhtred, because Alfred blames Uhtred for what's happening because he didn't outright kill Siegfried and Eric. You know, again, Otto has this, you know, conversation with Alfred when he tells him, you know, he is so valuable to this kingdom and he's done so much. Why would you push him away? And, you know, Alfred says to him, you know, he's a sword that I would rather wield than face, but he's not godly and he never will be, which is how Alfred sees Uhtred in a nutshell.
A sword. Yeah.
Yeah. A sword, but not to be trusted, but to be used. And that sucks because Uhtred has proven that he's worth so much more than that. And it's just awful. So yeah, Æthelred and Alfred decide to kind of shut Uhtred out of the battle plans, which is such a foolish move. It's
fucking
such a foolish
idiots,
move.
Idiots, dude. Yeah. It's this episode is dudes being idiots because they just, I don't know. It's so weird. The tension, there's so much tension in this episode anytime Alfred and Uhtred and Æthelred are there.
Yeah.
And I some of it is because Alfred thinks he can't trust Uhtred. I think some of it is because both Alfred and Æthelred are, you know, envious of Uhtred and jealous of Uhtred. And, you know, here's like this pagan that has people, you know, who are inspired by him and who follow him. And he's got this kind of power that they can't seem to harness. You know what I mean? That
right.
People legitimately love Uhtred. And I think...
Well, he's earned
someone,
that.
Yeah, he's earned it. But I think if you're someone like Æthelred, who's kind of has these aspirations to the throne and wants to be loved, to see someone like that, who's so different from you, have that, it's just kind of a... It's like a slap in the face. And I think there's that's where that tension comes from with all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not good allies at this point.
They're not, you know, because Uhtred and Æthelred go to London to sort of assess the situation and see if they can pay Siegfried and Eric silver to leave. And, you know, Æthelred just assumes that he can waltz in there and fling his money around and they'll listen. But Uhtred, like, he knows that that's not what they're looking for. And he knows that that's not going to be a course of action that works, but he respects Alfred enough to be like, all right, we can try negotiating, but this is not going to work.
Yeah. Bros and their egos, man. I mean, it's insane. It's really interesting because when they get to London, so this is where Siegfried and Eric are, they're kind of like shored up. It's interesting because I think Siegfried, I've never, had much faith in, but this episode, I think Eric really steps up and he's kind of playing a long game. And he has that conversation with his brother where he's like, you know, we're not like raiding and pillaging right now. I know that kind of sucks, you know, and you've got your arm that's hurting you. But if we can just hold out and we can do this right, we could, you know, rule over all of this. This could all be ours. And so he's playing a long game that not many Viking opponents that Alfred has had has been able to play. I think even Guthrum and Ubba, to an extent, were kind of ruled by their bloodlust and that kind of Viking urge to just conquer.
Right. You know, and Eric does have that urge to conquer, but he also has a real sense of honor and doing things the right way. So, you know, he talks when he's talking to Siegfried about, you know, Uhtred obviously knows that the corpse was a trick. And I think he feels a little bit of shame over how they tried to manipulate him instead of just being straightforward with their intentions. Like, I know there has to be a certain amount of manipulation in warfare and playing things close to your chest and whatnot. But Eric, I think he knows that that was a cheap move and that's not how he wants to win this war.
Yeah. Eric's a good dude, you guys.
Right. So. As good as a, you know, warlord as trying to conquer can be.
But we do need to have a chat about this London situation. So when everyone gathers,
crucifixion's going on.
Crucifixion's happening. We don't like the priests there, I guess. And Uhtred kind of convinces Siegfried to have this like one-on-one fight for this priest to fight for his freedom instead of just being strung up on a cross and like left to die for days.
Right. Well, because Uhtred met that priest in the last episode with Bayaka, and he found out that this priest was actually like a renowned warrior. So he knows when he's like, hey, how about you guys do hand-to-hand combat instead of crucifying him? He knows that he's given the priest Puleg a shot to survive.
Right. And which is very, very nice.
Classic
my
Uhtred.
My issue is, you know, I like we're bringing in the Roman history. We're talking about the Roman squares. You mm-hmm. know, I like that, Alyssa.
Yeah, make the square.
Make the square. But why is everyone so fucking dirty in this city? Like that dude, the Viking that they send to like fight the priest.
Covered
it's
in
just
filth.
Like,
yeah.
Covered. I mean, like he's rolled around in a like pig pen and then just got up.
Without the access to free, you know, fresh water, it's a bigger, like, I think everybody's just filthier in the cities, you know, because even Gisela at the beginning of the episode mentions that she doesn't feel clean in this water because they're so close to Westchester. And, you know, he's like, no, we're far enough from the city. It's fine. So you're just with that many people without a proper waste removal system, you're just going to be filthier in a city than you are living in the country.
I would die like within a matter of weeks.
Sure.
I mean, it would just.
Yeah. Yeah. Disgusting. But anyway, so Puleg wins his fight. He gets to leave with Uhtred. And, you know, Uhtred and Athelred now know that they aren't just going to be bought off with silver. They want to fight.
Which means that this kind of rift between Alfred and Uhtred, it really feels like a breakup episode, this episode.
It is. You know, it's crazy. You know, we put so much value on romantic love, but these kind of platonic friendships, and even if they're, contentious, I'm trying to say a word that I don't think exists.
Say it!
They are, there's a lot of contention in the relationship between Alfred and Uhtred, but they've known each other for, you know, a decade or more now. Like, there is a bond, whether they like it or not, and it's, like, that kind of breaking of a relationship can be just as profound as any romantic breakup, or more so.
Lord, I'm weary of this.
You are weary of this! You say you are sworn, yet you behave like a spy. You float into Daneland and back again. You tell half-truths, keep secrets, and you refuse to accept the existence of the one true God. You serve your king reluctantly.
But I serve, Lord.
I do not know you. And I can never know you. I do not understand you. And I will never understand you. That is a fact and one of increasing concern.
He's like, I don't know you. I can never know you. I don't understand you. And I will never understand you. And he shuts him out. And they're like, all right, we're going to do this without Uhtred. And Adda and Sayapa know that's a terrible idea. But Alfred thinks he can do it without Alfred or without Uhtred because he's stupid.
Yeah, because he's. And here's the thing. I mean, he's enjoying this, you know, this kind of reign of. Things are going pretty well. I mean, he's got to deal with the brothers, but mm-hmm. things are going marginally better than they were, you know, when we first started the show.
Yeah.
And I think that Alfred has gotten a little comfortable. I mean, mm-hmm. he's been able to rely on Uhtred for a lot. And now it's, you know, with this kind of break in this burning bridge mm-hmm. that he's, you know, lighting on fire, it's like, dude, do you not realize you don't have anyone to take his place?
Right.
Like, there's no Uhtred, like, for you waiting in the wings that's, you know, as pious as you are. Like, you're going to have to figure this out on your own if you're not going to rely on him.
Mm-hmm.
Promise me you won't desert him. Not yet, at least.
I'm not an oathbreaker.
How can I serve a man who doesn't trust me, to whom I have given so much? All he can see is how I'm different. All I see in him is his piety.
I think for Uhtred, being kind of thrown to the side, and especially when he has to take orders from Ethelred, like that's
the worst. Right. And you know, you can, yeah, it's awful. And you can see that conflict in him because he knows that he's not an oath breaker and he is an honorable man. But, you know, he says, how do I serve someone who does not trust me? And that is really a difficult spot to be in because you can't. Like, you can sort of muddle through, but you're never going to have success without a higher level of trust than they've got now. And so, you know, it's awful. It's awful.
It's terrible. I mean, it's because they're kind of at this stalemate where it's like he's not going to release him from his service because he knows he's still valuable to him, but he's not, he doesn't trust him enough to really harness all of that value. And for Uhtred, it's he's not going to break his oath because that's not who he is, but now he's stuck, you know, serving this guy who doesn't trust him, who he doesn't feel appreciated by, and then he's having to take orders from this like snotty-nosed little brat who is just such a not someone he would want to associate with if he could help it. And so it's like, I feel they've really, even though this is Alfred's like doing, I think they're both suffering because of it.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I feel like everybody's suffering right now.
God.
Everybody that I care about, because, you know, we see a little bit more of Athelflaed and Athelred's marriage, and he's obviously just being relentlessly cruel to her. And, you know, she's trying to be a good wife and she's trying to, you know, be helpful, but he's just cruel all the time. And, you know, she says
he's the worst. He accused her of not being a virgin when they got married.
Yes. And he, you know, she says something, love should be gentle and kind. And it's just such an obvious statement. Like, yes, that's something that everybody knows. Love should be gentle and kind. And he immediately takes that as, oh, you've had sex with other dudes who are better at that than me, or at least different than me. So this is a problem. And it's awful. And, you know, I liked, this was another moment that I liked with Bayaka in this episode, is, you know, they go to Cookham to see Uhtred and sort of, you know, take him on to go take back London with their terrible idea. And, you know, Athelred talks to Bayaka and is like, hey, is there a way to check if she was a virgin before me? Which is an insane thing.
There's like, not.
Like, that's insane. There's no way to check. Like, it's... Anyway.
I get that, like, we weren't, like, geniuses about anatomy at that point in time, but it's like, you've already had sex with her, dude. Like, you've...
Right, he's already had sex with her. And you know what? It's a scrunchie, not a piece of cellophane, so there's not a way to check. So, whatever, but, yeah, clearly, you know, nobody's taken anatomy lessons. But I liked that even Bayaka was like, wow, this is bullshit.
This is fucked up.
This is bad. And, you know, he's doing this, you know, this ritual or whatever with Tira and Hild, and he gets about halfway through and he's like, you know what?
This is beneath all of us. Slaps that cup away.
Right. And it just, you know.
Would that have done to her if she had drank it? Because it was water.
It was just water and dirt. So, like, she would have been fine. They were talking about, like, something would swell and her stomach would rot or something disgusting like that if she was, you know, impure or whatever. Ugh. But, you know, yeah. Bayoka agrees. He thinks it's bullshit, too. And
it's just so demeaning.
It was incredibly demeaning, and so he was the male ally of this episode and put a stop to it and just lied to Athelred and said she's fine. So.
I mean, I'm shocked. Like, who would have predicted that Bayoka would be the male ally?
Tira's a good influence on him.
I think
she's
so.
She's a good influence on him, so he's pulling the classic, well, I have sisters and a wife, so of course
there
I respect women. He's starting to view them as people now that he knows a couple.
That's great.
Yeah. So
that's what takes, apparently. So
I guess. So, yeah, they all go off to London. Tira and Athelflaed are sort of staying in a camp, which just seems like it's just a bad idea. Just deal with some separation anxiety and stay where it's safe instead of being, oh, it's fine, a mile away from the castle or whatever. We'll be fine here. No, you
it's
won't
weird.
Be fine.
I like for with Ethelflaed, I think it's a control thing. You know, Ethelred mm-hmm. is like, because she questions, she's like, you want me to come like to yeah. war? And he's like, only halfway, because he wants to dictate where she goes and when and all of that just kind of bullshit that abusers really dig. I think for Tira, I think I could see it being a thing of like, well, Ethelflaed is going, I'm not going to let her go alone, you know, because as we've said, like Tira is just such a kind, sweet person.
She's very empathetic and she recognizes the signs of abuse.
Yes.
You know, she knows that things are not good for her and she's just such a boon to her. And it's really a beautiful dynamic to watch. And Tira, I love her.
She is the best. And there's a point when they're so they get to London. Mm-hmm. They do this kind of three-sided attack that they have planned. They get into the city and it's just, I mean, it's deserted. They don't run into Eric and Siegfried and their crew like they think they're going to.
And Ethelred is so stupid because he immediately assumes that, oh, they fled. They aren't pulling a trick on us and are going to ambush us. No, they were so terrified by our massive army that they completely left without a fight.
Like, you think someone was scared of you, dude? You?
Right. And it's, you know, it's one of those things like, did he not pay attention at all when they visited them and met them and spoke to them? That is so counterintuitive to everything that Siegfried and Eric have communicated. And so for him to fall for that so immediately, it was just like, ugh, you're the worst.
The biggest of eye rolls.
Ugh.
But yeah, so they don't kind of run into what they're expecting to run into because...
And Uhtred figures it out right away.
Oh, yeah,
he's
because
like,
he's...
Oh, shit.
He's seasoned. He is yeah. seasoned. He's been
exactly.
through this. He knows.
He has the experience.
God, listen to Uhtred, people. It's not that hard. When we're talking about battlefield strategy and how we should kind of approach things when it comes to warfare, like...
Listen to Uhtred.
This should be the only... opinion you value because
yeah.
there's no way Ethelred knows what he's talking about.
He doesn't. And so, yeah, they, instead of waiting in the castle, they go and attack the camp and take prisoners and it's devastating.
Yeah.
Actually, I really like the way that it was shot, though. I mean, like, I know what's going to happen, but like a lot of people die. And I like how it's shot, though. It's very chaotic and it really heightens the sort of feelings of fear that Tira especially is feeling. And so, yeah, that whole scene at the end, I thought was really well done.
Yeah, I loved that we kind of took that first person point of view, like when we followed Tira and she's trying to get Ethelflaed and get to the woods because she knows like that's who they're going to be coming for. And yeah, again, I mean, we do so many Game of Thrones references, but it reminded me so much of Battle of the Bastards.
Sure.
Where
the
it was just,
and
yeah,
the
just
claustrophobia.
In the thick of it. Yeah. Cause you can watch it from a distance and be like, oh, that looks crazy, you know? But then when you're like, when they allow you to be in it like that, it's just, you can just imagine how overwhelming and how terrifying it was. And the fact that Tira is able to kind of keep a calm head and say, I need to find Ethelflaed. We need to get to the woods. Like she's, you know, she's been through something like this before and she's prepared and knows what she has to do, but it's still like so frightening. And I think there's a moment when she realizes that they're coming for the camp and she just starts chanting, death is coming. And I'm just like, oh
it was
my God.
Chilling.
What the? Death is coming! Take off your sword!
She's trying to wake up all the drunken soldiers
and
get everyone out.
If you are that close to a battle, that's not the time to get blackout drunk. It's just not. I know you're not going to be like in it, but still. Jesus.
Put down the ale.
Right.
Like, do your fucking job.
Do your job. But yeah, it's awful. They get taken. End of episode. It's a lot.
End of episode. And it's terrifying. So... we know what's going to happen, but to follow Ethelflaed into the woods and that last shot where it's just the brothers like coming
so
up
menacing.
On her.
So
that
menacing.
That was scary. Yeah. You know? Like that's nightmare inducing.
Yeah.
Like, ugh, Chills.
It's a lot.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So now it's time for our next episode wishes. This is when we issue our demands for the upcoming episodes, like the spoiled toddlers that we are. Here's what we want to see, when we want to see it, and why we won't be denied. Alyssa, what are you looking forward to next episode?
I feel a little guilty because this is at the expense of Athelflaed, but I'm ready for Alfred to eat some crow. You know, he's so dismissive of Uhtred and, you know, is so awful to him. And of course, by shutting him out, it went badly. So I know this is never going to happen, but I'm ready for people to give Uhtred some credit. You know, they clearly cannot do this without him. And Athelred really blew it in his first act as kind of a would-be king, you know? And so I want Alfred to sort of realize that he put his eggs in the wrong basket there, and I'm ready for him to be apologetic.
Yeah, could we get a shame nun to, like, come out and ring the bell?
Right. Ring the bell for Alfred, who sacrificed his daughter to a supremely shitty husband. So,
yeah. I'm down with that. I think for me, I mean, you know what's coming.
I know
what's coming.
The anticipation is killing me. It's so good.
The brothers have captured Athelflaed, and I am ready to see our sweet Danish cream puff properly woo his princess.
It's so good. It's so good. I can't wait to see it.
God. Okay. Anyway, she suffered through enough, and she has a shit husband, and she deserves this romance and this time to herself. And so, you know, she's going to go through it. She's still a prisoner. It's not like she's going to be living cushy, but, you know, I think it's not
anything
a big
is better than Athelred, honestly, at this point.
Anything is better.
Yeah.
I think she feels that too.
Sure.
But yeah, Eric is a major improvement. So bring it on.
Bring it on. So The Last Kingdom has a massive cast of interesting characters, and nearly everyone gets their time to shine. Our arsling of the episode is the character who truly goes above and beyond to win the war or simply win our hearts. I think I can guess, but who is your arsling of the episode, Jessica?
I feel like I'm becoming like predictable. I need to throw you for a loop. but I'm not going to this episode. It's Eric, of course.
The best.
I think it's because he reminds me a lot of Uhtred with this kind of moral compass that he has. Mm-hmm. And I mean, especially when you put him up against his brother, he's just such a better option. Mm-hmm. But while Siegfried is kind of moaning over the loss of his hand and the fact that they aren't killing more Saxons and all this bullshit, Eric's playing the long game. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. He's patient. He's got a strategy going on. You know, I would not be surprised if the whole let's leave London and attack that camp and make them think we just kind of bailed was his idea, because he just seems like a smart dude and someone who will play the game. You know, he'll sacrifice the least to gain the most.
Sure.
And yeah, I like a Viking warrior who also has a brain.
I get it. Brain and brawn. What more do you want?
I mean, the whole package.
I'm going to go with Bayaka this episode with an assist from Tira. You know, Bayaka knew what Athelred wanted was a bunch of sexist bullshit, and he actually put a stop to it. Instead of just, like, being pained and going along with it like Alfred, he took a stand, and he wanted Athelflaed to tell, you know, her dad about the abuse. But because of how she's been raised and how she's been conditioned, you know, she believes that it's her duty. But Bayaka, like, he saw that something was wrong and did what he could to fix it. And I feel like not enough people do that.
He is not tender or loving. Father Bayaka must tell the king.
No, you cannot.
The king is the only man who can end it.
God put an end to this ordeal before it had begun. Not all in Mercia are friends of Wessex. Not all are happy with the king's influence. And I must do my duty to Alfred. My husband will not break me.
And I, you know, again, like, I loved seeing Tira interacting with Athelflaed. Like, she's been through so much and sees so much. And her gentleness just, it floors me every time. So I stan a kind couple.
I mean, be kind. Like, that's the sexiest thing you could be, is kind.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Very underrated.
They're so sweet. And it's really sweet to see that. How Tira has influenced Bayaka just from, you know, I mean, I remember him at the end of season one when Isolde saved the baby and he came in and we were just like, dude, just sit down. Like,
read the room and
go. Just shouting all about God. And we're like, come on, man, give us a break. And now he's, you know, refusing to do something that I think normally maybe season one Bayaka would have done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's growth there. And you know what? Yeah. I like it.
Growth is beautiful.
Get ready to shame Nun, the worst character of the episode, with us. It doesn't matter if you're a Saxon or a Dane, anyone can be a turd, and we're calling out the biggest one of the episode. So, Alyssa, who are you just, like, fucking hating this episode?
Okay, you know, we've talked a lot about Athelred and how we hate him, and he's terrible.
Sure.
You know, no disagreements there. But I am just, I'm so frustrated by Alfred because I know that he knows better. You know what I mean? Like, he hands off his daughter to a man that he knows is evil. Like, he may not have proof, but in his heart, he knows that Athelred is a wicked man. But he still refuses to trust Uhtred because of this differing religion. And he trusts Athelred because they have the same religion. Like, he says constantly, he's a godly man, it'll be fine. But it's not. And, you know, in this episode, like, Alfred is just a user. Like, he's going to use Uhtred until he's not convenient. He's going to use Athelflaed until, you know, it goes south. Like, he is sort of collecting people that are useful to him and will turn on them in a moment. And that, I just, is such terrible behavior and I can't condone it. So turd of the week for me is Alfred for sure.
Yeah, not very kingly of you,
no,
dude.
I mean,
want to amass allies and really gain loyalty. And
but you're picking the wrong people.
Yeah, and it's so weird because Alfred is not stupid. Alfred is a very smart man.
He's ambitious, and that's sort of clouding his better judgment right now.
I think it's, yeah, I think, again, and it's always been this, it's the pull between that ambition and then, you know, having to check himself with his religion. That's always going to be Alfred's problem. But he really loses that battle this episode. And yeah, he's fucked himself over. He's got no one else to blame. So Alfred is a worthy turd. I think the only one that could kind of compete with him this episode is Athelred.
I get it. Awful.
I mean, just, the dude's a pig. He's a misogynist. You rape your wife on your wedding night. You accuse her of not being a virgin before, you know, you guys got married, even though she's the king's daughter. Like, she is, it's not like she's just running the fucking streets over here. Like, come on, dude.
Right.
And you put her through some kind of, like, bogus religious trial, really just to embarrass her. I mean, he wasn't expecting anything to come of it, I don't think. I think he was just,
shame.
It's just another,
it's just
way
shame
to abuse. Yeah, it's another form of abuse. And Athelred is, I don't get why he's such a dick, but he is. And Athelflaed does not deserve it. So
she does not.
He's my turd of the week, probably of the entire season. Just keep
and
in the
into
back of your mind
and into next season,
asshole.
He's terrible forever.
Yeah, whenever they kill this dude, I will be the first to kind of
cheer.
Celebrate.
Yeah,
drink some ale. Yeah, just really go all out because he's an asshole.
Yeah, agreed. Now, this is clearly a very serious podcast about a very serious show, but sometimes it's nice to indulge in a little thirst. It's 2019, the world is on fire, and honestly, we deserve this. So this is our time to celebrate the thirstiest moments that really blew our skirts up this episode. Jessica, how are you feeling? Like, it's not the sexiest, but I feel like there's one nice moment that we can talk about.
Yeah, so that's the beginning of the episode for me. Which I was really thankful for Uhtred and Gisela's kind of little skinny dipping scene to start off this episode. It's not, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like thirst, and there's a quality in this relationship. It's crazy how that affects things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
It feels like, you know, how a couple who've been together for a while would relate to each other and interact if they had some time to themselves. It kind of washes out a little bit the bad taste of Ethelred and just how terrible he is to see, you know, these two people who are obviously really in love sharing some time. They deserve it. Yeah. I wish, you know, Gisela could have had a whole lazy morning without being kind of interrupted by Dix, who said some really terrible things to her.
Yeah.
But, plus always a shirtless Uhtred is always welcome. So,
sure.
No complaints.
Yeah, you know, Uhtred and Gisela have such a beautiful relationship. You know, like, they're a team, they're hot for each other, and they always have each other's backs, which I love. Like, Uhtred is already always ready to go to the mat for her, and she is always there supporting him. And, you know, what more do you want? You know, they're, and I think especially in this episode, you can kind of see how their relationship is such a stark contrast to Æthelred and Æthelflæd at this point. And, you know, I'm horny for this level of emotional health.
All right, guys. It's safe to say that we have never been accused of being unenthusiastic in our fandom. We annoy our friends, our family members, and now you, our devoted listeners. Welcome to Geek Out, where we will offer up our humble suggestions about what we think you should be watching and reading.
Yeah.
Alyssa, what are you kind of standing this week?
Okay, so we haven't recorded in a little while, so this is a little bit late, but we have got to talk about the Succession finale.
Look, we've been patient, and now we get to really dive into this.
Yeah, so
it was insane.
Oh my God. Okay, so if you watch Succession and somehow haven't watched the finale yet, turn this off because we need to discuss the Kendall Roy growing a backbone. I've been waiting for it for two seasons, and now he's there. He's going to take down his dad. And I just, when he's, you know, giving that prepared speech, and then he kind of pauses and says, but I was like, it was too much. I freaked out.
Look, the show's so good. But that entire episode, there's just the tension, the mounting tension all episode. They're on this boat. They're trying to figure out who are we going to sacrifice? You know, who's going to be the pig led to slaughter? And you can just feel everyone getting more and more antsy. And then when it's kind of agreed on that it's going to be Kendall,
I have questions about that. Do you think I want to know when you think Kendall made his choice to betray his dad.
So I think that he knew that it was coming.
Uh-huh.
I think he was expecting his dad to tell him it was going to be him.
Yeah.
And I think at some point in that conversation is when he decided. I don't think it was a spur of the moment thing.
No, but I think what really pushed him to it was that final conversation. Like you said, when he told his dad, or when his dad told him that it was going to be him. And when he asked him, you know, was it ever going to be me to get the CEO position? And his dad was like, no, you're not a killer.
You're not a killer.
You're not a killer.
Yeah.
And that was like, all right, if I'm not a killer, I will show you that I am actually a killer.
He's a literal killer.
Right. Ooh. Yeah. Well, and I think it was such an interesting swapping of positions for him and for Shiv, because Kendall, you know, he's so beaten down by his father that he'll do.
He's a daddy's boy.
He is. And he'll do anything to sort of please him. And he isn't afraid to like prostrate himself in front of his dad to like get what he needs from him. And Shiv is always, you know, sort of like stood up straight and she's done what she's had to do. And she's so ruthless, except in this episode where she can't quite turn on Tom. Mm. And so she begs her dad, please don't let it be Tom. And I think that Logan probably saw as a weakness in her. And so yeah, that was a big, that's going to be a real schism in their relationship. Also, like, you know, she didn't say make it Kendall, but the only other option other than Kendall was Tom. So for her to be like, not Tom, she's basically saying, yeah, let's do Kendall.
Yeah.
And so that, like, there's going to be so much fallout in the next season, and I cannot wait.
It's going to be crazy. And honestly, I'm going to be pissed. I know that this is how they're going to react, but like, if Shiv and Roman are like, oh, fuck you, man, like, how could you do this to dad? I'm just going to lose it. Like, come on, guys.
Well, because, okay, so Shiv, I think, will be more upset with Kendall, because there were a few moments in this episode that I think really drove home the bond between Kendall and Roman. Mm. And, you know, because like when Logan tells Roman, you're going to be CEO by yourself now. And he kind of looks at Kendall and he's like, is that okay? And Kendall's like, yes, this is a good thing. Like, you've earned this. And there were moments like that. And, you know, Roman was kind of the only one to stick up for Kendall. And mm-hmm. I hope that this pushes them together into being opposed to their father together, you know, the two of them and Greg against Logan.
But what a team up.
Man, I knew, you know, it's one of those things, like, I knew that, you know, having those papers was going to be a big deal. Like, it was like Chekhov's documents, and I was just waiting for the gun to go off. And for him, because, you know, he told Kendall at the end of last season that I have some of this stuff and I'm just kind of waiting to use it. And Kendall, you know, Kendall must have reached out to him and been like, hey, do you still have that stuff? Let's use it. And so that, I think, is the ascension of Greg the Egg is going to be so good.
God, it's just so interesting because dynamics have really shifted. Like, that season finale, I mean, I think the big one was Kendall standing up to his dad, and so it's definitely going to fuel next season.
Sure.
But to see these kind of sides being taken already, you know what I mean? It's just everything's kind of thrown
coming
up in the
head.
Air. Yeah. We don't really know who's going to land on which side. And, yeah, God, I'm so fucking excited. I cannot wait.
I know. We have to wait so long now, but it'll be fine. It'll be worth it. So,
well, look, in the meantime, you can watch another HBO show. Watchmen came out last week, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was on Sunday, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really understand the point of, like, kind of quantifying or qualifying, like, time. Because, like, who knows when people are listening to this. Anyway,
right.
Watchmen's out. That's
right, the pilot dropped.
That's a fact.
Yes.
And it was insane. Have you seen it?
I haven't watched it yet. Ooh. I read the comic and it wasn't my favorite. Like, I understand its importance, but it's just a lot. And, you know, the movie was so bad and I it was so bad.
That movie was terrible.
And I know that this is like a separate thing from that. It's sort of a continuation, more like a sequel, right?
Mm. Yeah, so it's definitely a continuation. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that you have to, in my opinion, because it's been a long time since I've seen the Watchmen film, like,
right,
watching this pilot and not really, I didn't, like, go back and, like, recap that for myself or, like, kind of educate myself on what happened. I just kind of went in. So it was almost like I was watching it without knowing.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, a more interesting way to approach it because it's a continuation, you know. So if you've watched the film, if you read the comics, there are some Easter eggs, there's some Easter eggs there and you'll kind of get them. But I don't think you have to. I think it's almost better to treat it as a standalone because it's so different and it's very interesting. It's futuristic and yet it's so relevant to kind of where we are now and the feelings that we have now, I think, as a culture, as a society.
Plus
I mean, Regina King.
That was exactly what I was about to say. She is so good and she's so good. She broke my heart in If Beale Street Could Talk last year. Like,
oh,
just
my God.
Cut me open. She was so good. She's so good in everything.
Shout out to, like, you know, everyone involved with the show to see. I feel like Regina King gets passed over a lot. Like, she's you know, under the radar for the kind of caliber actress that she is. Mm-hmm. And I think she's starting to get more recognition now. But
she won an Oscar, so.
Yeah. But, like, shout out to this show for being like, you know what, she's going to be our lead. And this is going to be, like, a sci-fi, like, futuristic fucking show. And she's going to be, like, our main, like, vigilante. Like,
that's a big deal.
Yeah. She deserves it.
I will watch it. It's on my list. I just haven't.
Watch for Regina King. She's wearing a badass outfit. She's kicking ass. It's pretty cool. There's a shootout in a cow field. So there's gross element. but yeah, and Jeremy Irons is in it. And I'm pretty sure he's playing a bad guy. I still don't know. But just, you know.
Is he playing Ozymandias?
I think he is.
Okay.
I think he is. So that he's not identified as such in the pilot. But there's like little hints and teases that just makes me think that's who he is. He's a fucking weirdo though. And just to hear, like, Jeremy Irons has a very distinct voice, you know?
Scar, right.
Yeah. So to hear, like, picture Scar, like, you know, sitting naked and having a woman like massage his thigh while he's like typewriting like his play. I mean, it's just there's just some weird. It's weird.
All right,
but good.
I still want to watch it.
It's not like predatory. It's just weird.
Yeah. All right, I will watch
it. That's my pitch.
I don't think that's a good one. Regina King is enough of a
pitch.
Back
to Regina King. Yeah. Black out everything I just said and just focus on Regina King.
Fair enough. All right, guys. If you want to hear more of our bullshitting, check us out on Twitter or over at SciFiWire Fangirls. We've got links to everything below this episode.
And until next time, destiny is all, bitches.